I think you would recognize instantly Chris Luquette as the guitar player with Frank Sullivan and Dirty Kitchen. That's a phenomenal band. To be able to stand on stage with them every night and perform and be available to stretch out the way that band can musically takes a lot. I've become a fan of Chris over the last 4 or 5 years, having run into him in different concert venues. Finally had a chance to talk with him, and we're going to share that with you in the second hour of the show. Chris Luquette, as I say, the normal guitar player you're going to see with Frank Sullivan, his other projects. You're going to learn a little bit about his interest in music, where it came from. And I would just tell you this, you're going to hear some rain falling. That's what happens. We're at a festival. Chris ran over to my camping area in the rain. The rain was pretty constant. You may just hear it as white noise, but you're going to enjoy learning from Chris what his musical influences are and what he's up to. I did. Been a fan for a long time. Finally, happy to have a chance to chat with him for a bit.
I'm really happy to welcome the Unreal Bluegrass, Chris Luquette. How are you, Chris?
I'm great, Steve. Good to see you here.
Here we are at Gray Fox.
Yes, a little bit wet today, but
wet.
We're powering through.
We were talking before we went on. You aptly name it Wet Fox, although
yes,
really,
Wet Fox. Yeah,
it just started raining.
Yeah, it did. No, it was great.
Chris, I've known. I saw you earlier today walking around, and I thought I wish I had the opportunity to speak to you. Now that it's raining, you might as well do it. I've heard you, seen you play for years and years. I think the listening audience would immediately recognize Frank Sullivan Band as maybe your most familiar avenue for
yeah,
music.
Yeah, Frank Sullivan Dirty Kitchen. I've been playing guitar with Frank here, calendar year number 5, I guess. Festival season number 6. So spent some time here with Frank, and it's great.
The Frank Sullivan Band it appeals to me because, number one, you're all virtuosos, in my opinion.
All right.
And I love the music that comes out. You've got everybody. We'll talk about everybody in the band, but I also look at on stage, and I have your records, too. I have Frank's records. So I'll talk to you about a couple other things.
Sure.
But on stage, the band members seem pretty free to expand.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean as a musician? Can you talk
I do,
about that
yeah.
a little bit?
Well, everybody in our band has wildly diverse backgrounds. I've played a lot of different folk music styles, studied rock, jazz, blues. Mike Munford, who plays banjo in our band, I remember having a conversation about he went to see Oscar Peterson back in the 60s or 70s to hear some jazz, you know. And so he's way into jazz, bluegrass, and Frank.
I have to tell you, I saw Oscar Peterson, too, but I can't play banjo like Mike.
Wow, yeah. There's something to it. He's got a Blue Note Club, New York City Blue Note Club, over his truss rod cover, a little cover.
Oh, does
there.
He really?
Yeah,
oh,
so that's geez. Mike. And then and Frank Sullivan, he's got some distant Hawaiian cousins, and he's played Hawaiian music with people and blues and folk and all sorts of things. And our newest addition to the band is Jeremy Middleton, who lives in Nashville and plays a lot of country gigs, a lot of rock gigs, and he's grown up playing all sorts of styles of music. So we have a super diverse cast of musicians, all bonded together by bluegrass and acoustic music. Yeah.
It was the time that I've seen you perform, you listen to jazz, too.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
have to, because I've yeah. seen you take some runs where I'm thinking, you could take this portion out and put it into a more modern jazz setting.
Yeah.
What's your influence in jazz? Just
Well, early on, when I was a young teenager, taking some guitar lessons, I was studying all sorts of things, Beatles music and Led Zeppelin solos and all sorts of things. And then one day, my teacher at the time handed me a copy of Miles Davis's Kind of Blue album. And he goes, here, check this out. I think you might like it, because I was learning about soloing at the time.
Yeah.
I think you might like it. And I loved it and got into jazz through that. I don't have any really formal jazz education, but I listen to a lot of it. You know, you spend 4 days at a festival like Gray Fox, and then you have maybe a 5 or 6 hour drive back to wherever you're going,
right.
And you kind of think, maybe I should listen to something a little different to pass the time, you know. And so I find myself studying a lot of jazz, listening to jazz, rock and roll, whatever. You know, I eat, sleep, breathe music, so I'm always looking for something.
You are from the West Coast.
Yes, Seattle, Washington. Renton, Washington, which is a suburb of Seattle. Yep. Grew up going to Wintergrass, was the festival out there that kind of helped me get into jamming and really figuring out my way in bluegrass.
You we were talking a little bit before. We were trying to wait for some of the rain to quiet down. We decided it wasn't going to happen. But while we were waiting for that, we were talking about some of your early influences. It turns out maybe one of your first influences was, in fact, from a bluegrass background. I mean, some of the folky type music you heard on the West Coast.
Yeah, I mean, well, early on,
not that that should be surprising.
Right.
But saying that, in fact, you were impressed by this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, all the bands I was listening to, the Beatles, Grateful Dead, you know, Allman Brothers, whatever, they always had sort of a folk background. I remember reading a book about the Grateful Dead, and they were talking about how when they weren't practicing or touring, they were listening to bluegrass Bill Monroe albums and such, and I just remember being fascinated by that and sort of chasing it down and that lead and sort of studying. And through that, I discovered, you know, a Bill Monroe recording, a specific Bill Monroe recording of the Bluegrass Boys live at Newport in 1963, which was Del McCurry in the band, Bill Keith, at the time Brad Keith. Exactly, playing banjo in the band. And so I remember hearing that, and it was just such a raw, powerful, lightning-in-a-bottle kind of sound. And I just immediately knew I wanted to learn about it and got into bluegrass that way, you know?
We were talking before we started this interview. You got to spend – you were a fan of Bill Keith, as yeah. many people are. I was. And you know from where you're sitting that Bill was always camping.
His
teepee. Yep. And you said before that you spent some quality time in the teepee with Bill. Bill was an extraordinary person for doing that, but tell me a little bit about your experience.
Well, when I got a hold of that Monroe band Newport recording and immediately went out and bought a banjo. There's a recording of Devil's Dream on there, and there's specifically a Keith solo on Rawhide that I still listen to today and just like have to stop and just go, oh my gosh. And it's powerful. And so a few months later, I got a cheap banjo, was studying banjo, and found out about a camp called the American Banjo Camp near Port Townsend, Washington, that Bill Keith went to and was an instructor. And I went to that camp and mustered up the courage to chat with him, and I was, I think, 16 at the time, and ended up just hanging out with him and chatting a lot. He's a very personal guy and loved talking about music. And anybody who studied or took any classes with him know about how much he loved the Circle of Fifths. And, you know, having listened to some jazz and studied jazz, I was never scared of music theory. So when the class came around at the banjo camp and he started getting way into music theory, harmonics and Circle of Fifths and everything, I looked around the class and some of the other people were kind of dozing off a little bit. And I was just eating it up. The more he got into it, the more I got into it. And there was a connection there.
Yeah.
And I ended up a few years later started going to IBMA, and he was there. He ended up doing a Jim Queston jug band reunion at a festival in Portland, Oregon that I connected with him. And he was just a very likable guy.
Thinking back of the trepidation you had to even saying hello to him, and now you realize that he was one of the most, you know, come on, I'll show you everything I do, everything you want to absorb. Yep. I will give to you. And he was one of the most open, and having the opportunity to just hang around with him and see people come up, and they still have that initial. But once, like you say, once you get to know him and you respect what he's doing and understand what he's doing, he was just like, let me show you. Let me teach you.
Yep.
So it was neat that you got to listen to that, get that music theory, and you picked up some banjo. I want to talk a little bit about your banjo playing before we move on, but... music, just the music part of what he was doing. Whether it was banjo or not, the music part of what he was thinking and his ideas and applying all that. You're right, the Circle of Fifths to him was so easy.
Yeah, and that's a universal musical language thing that applies to a lot of different instruments. You know, I still play a little bit of banjo, but never pursued it professionally, guitar mainly and mandolin. But those things he was talking about still apply.
They apply
to everything. So I still think about that a lot.
You're wearing right now a Barcelona bluegrass.
I got it. Yep.
You're on an album from Spain playing banjo.
Right. Yeah. Yep. I met a gentleman named Luis Gomez actually through my friend, mutual friend Tom Neckville.
Yeah.
I met Luis.
We know Tom from the banjo. Yeah, Tom's been on the show several times and. Yeah. A very innovative banjo manufacturer.
Yes. Great guy, Tom. And so I met Luis Gomez from Barcelona at IBMA probably 2010. And, of course, it's a little tough to get across the pond these days with the flight. So I didn't hook up flight costs. So I didn't see Luis again until last summer, but stayed in touch with him through Facebook and things like that. But then last year I had a couple of weeks off from the band and took myself over to France and to Spain. And with Dirty Kitchen, I've played at the La Roche Bluegrass Festival a couple of times in France. And I went back last year not as a performer, but just as a guest. And then ended up taking a side trip to Barcelona because I had never been to Spain and stayed with Luis. And he was also a friend of Bill Keith's for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, went over to Europe, you know, and Bill spoke fluent French and would go to France and teach and play. And so Luis knew him. And so I went over last year and we hung out, and this was, of course, after Bill had passed away, but we talked about, me and Luis talked about Bill and banjos. We brought out banjos, and I played a little bit of banjos. And then at the time, Luis was recording a solo record, and we did two I played guitar on one track, one of Luis's original tunes, and played we did a duet banjo recording of Devil's Dream. I think he had a guy film it. There's a film recording on YouTube.
Oh, is there?
Okay. Check out.
I'll find it.
And then it's on Luis's latest record. And, of course, all things leading back to Bill Keith, I ended up playing a Bill Keith custom model Rich and Taylor banjo on the recording.
Okay.
And Luis was playing his Neckville banjo. So there was a lot of great vibes.
It all comes
on
around.
Day.
It all comes
sure
around. Must have been a good feeling. You spent... Of course, we're talking about Spain with Luis, but you've mentioned some of the French. Bluegrass is pretty powerful. I mean, it's got a good following over there. Different festivals.
Yeah.
It's amazing to people in America, and I'm talking to Chris Luquette. It's amazing to people in America that I think they're kind of aware it's over there, but they don't. They're not aware of the fervor that's involved.
Yeah. Well, I get that being from Seattle. You know, people ask, "Oh, you're from Seattle? There's much bluegrass there?" You know, and that, I hear people, you know. People from Kentucky or Tennessee, they think that even about, they hear about Grey Fox, and they go, there's bluegrass up there, and you look around at the 5,000 people in this field and go, yeah, there's bluegrass everywhere.
There is so much history and bluegrass and acoustic music in this area that, well, you know that because you're around here, but it's like, this is I live in Kentucky, and I grew up in Kentucky, but you can't find this concentration.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's some magic point around the Woodstock area or whatever's going on, but you know, Tony Trischka is a stone throws away, and all these guys are, and they all you come and go and move. Not to say in Woodstock, but this part of New York State is just an amazing a source for great musicians.
Sure is. Yeah, and bluegrass, like we just said, has that international reach. You know, one of my favorite events is the IBMA, the International Bluegrass Music Association convention. They reach out to musicians all over the world, which is really neat to see. You know, and like the festival I went to a lot when I was first starting, Wintergrass did the same thing. A lot of people from Japan and South Korea would come to that. It's really neat to see. And the festival that I went to and played twice with Dirty Kitchen La Roche is about this, not quite as big as Grey Fox, but gets at least 2,000-3,000 spectators to come. And they have the gentleman who runs it, Christopher Howard Williams, hires 2 or 3 bands from the United States and then fills it out, the lineup out with about 25 or 30 bluegrass bands from across Europe. Sweden to the Czech Republic to Spain to all over the place. It's really great.
I wish they have an easier time to come here. I wish we could share more of that.
I know, absolutely. And there's a lot of musicians that I know over there that are amazing pickers, and they have amazing diverse influences, and I'd love for my connections to blend from here and there. And it's expensive, and there's a little bit of a climate of hard to get to. I know that there was some stories in the bluegrass press about some bands coming over that were turned away just to play a bluegrass festival for free, and that shouldn't be happening in my mind, but that's a different subject.
You know Silvio Ferretti. You know
Correct.
Red Wine.
Yes.
I know Silvio.
Yep.
We've talked about that just a couple months ago, that he's not coming back. There were issues with him.
Yeah.
You know, he came in. I'm on IBMA board. I got like a year and a half to go, which is great. They honored me to do that. But Silvio came to Nashville, but he won't be coming back to Raleigh because it's hard to get out of the country and get here.
Oh, I hate hearing that. Yeah, Silvio's as good a banjo player as you're going to hear anywhere.
He's a great guy. He's a great
player.
He's a great craftsman.
Yep. Those banjo bridges.
The bridges.
Legendary.
Yeah, it's working. So he won't be coming back until it kind of gets straight. It is.
Yeah,
he adds so much to the environment of music, and he brings that international flavor. And I often do this, too, and I'll let you go here in a minute, though. I don't know what it is about the French. Why did they get – we were talking about jazz earlier.
Yeah.
All of my favorite jazz guys, when I don't think it was just because rock and roll came around, but they all went to France.
Yeah,
and they were rock stars. I'm talking about 50s and 60s.
Right.
Whereas this country, they were kind of like, but over in France, they knew that Dexter Gordon was a genius. They knew that. And now you can find all this stuff on YouTube.
Right. Duff Smith, the great violinist.
Yeah.
From what I hear, people that have studied his music, he sort of kind of gave up on the scene here just because of, I think, a little bit of racial tension, you know, hard to confront
But I don't know.
And he just felt that over there, they accept, you know, and over there, it didn't matter. No segregated clubs or anything, and they just played. And, it's a very embracing. I mean, if you try and introduce a new flavor of cheese, you might not be so lucky, but new music, they love it. They really do.
I think it's great. Yeah. I think it's great that you get to go over there and share music with them. And
it's always been an honor to travel to Europe and play.
That's great. Yeah, I don't know. It's still raining.
Yes, it is. Hey, it's the first day. It's not even a stage show here today on Wednesday.
That's true.
So we'll persevere. I've been here. This is This is Gray Fox number 5, and this is performing number 4. And last year I came and was opened up and let in just to got a great rapport with the people. They're so friendly here.
I saw you last year, and you weren't on stage.
Yeah, I wasn't on stage, but I did a guitar workshop.
That's right.
My way in.
And now we're looking right over at Creekside. You're going to be doing something. Make sure I get on that. Yeah.
Yeah, Friday night, there's a Chris Bouquet and Friends, which means I got to go make some friends between now and then. But jokes aside, I'm really honored to just have a little bit of stage time. Actually, it's a great time to mention that I have a solo record that isn't out yet. Probably looking at an early 2018 release.
Okay.
We're going to sample a little bit of music from that. I think roughly some of the friends, a couple of Dirty Kitchen guys will show up. We're going to get Mike Munford to play some banjo on some things that he really likes. And then a couple of friends from New York City are going to come up. Larry Cook, Rick Snell, they're going to help me out a little bit. My friend Tony Watt might swing by, the great educator and guitar player from Cambridge. So it's going to be a fun time. And then 2 Dirty Kitchen sets on Saturday here at Gray Fox.
When this show airs, that will have already happened in the past.
All right. But we had fun. It was a great time.
It was a great show.
Gosh,
and then you're going to get me that CD when it comes
absolutely.
Out next year.
You got it.
You're going to be at IBMA this year.
We'll be there this year, absolutely.
All right, I'll be down there. All right, Chris, man, thanks for coming over in the rain.
Oh, my pleasure.
I appreciate the opportunity.
I had nowhere else to go.
Well, that's true. I know. That's usually how I get people on the show. They've got nothing else to
exactly.
do. So,
perfect.
And I saw you this morning, and I thought, I should carry that with me. And we could have done it in a dry car.
Well, here we are.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
See you back.